This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. In the November issue of the Atlantic Monthly, contributing editor Hannah Rosen writes about a young boy who played with Barbies, wore dresses and high heels, and left usual boy toys like an army set unopened. His mother is a woman she calls Tina, who was confused by her son's behavior. Rosen spent time with Tina and her family and describes several critical months in their lives. In her article, A Boy's Life, Rosen writes of the complicated and heartbreaking reality of families with children that are transgender and struggle with sexual identity. We've spoken with Tina, too, and can confirm that she is who she says she is. We've agreed to use her pseudonym to protect the identity of her son, who she now calls her daughter. Later in the hour, our series This American Moment continues with former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright. But first, if you're the parent of a transgender child or have a child that struggles with his or her sexual identity, tell us your story. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also share your story on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. We begin with Tina Sims. Again, Tina is a pseudonym. We've confirmed her identity. She joins us on the line, and welcome to Talk of the Nation. Tina, are you there?
Hello, I'm here.
And we're going to agree to refer to your daughter, as you call her, as Sweepy.
Sweepy.
And when did you begin to suspect that your daughter was not who you thought she was?
About the age of two. About the age of two, when she was a pretty early talker and walker. And from as soon as she could kind of walk and start saying things, she was very drawn to, you know, Barbie dolls in the stores. It was always pointing, wanting to go to the aisles where the Barbies and the girls' stuff was and baby dolls. And just really connected with, and I'm not a very, one of my aunts is very, she dresses very nice and has a lot of jewelry, and her hair's always done and her makeup's always done. Mm-hmm. And that's unlike me most of the time. And just, you know, would go up and you got beautiful hair and rubber hair and look at her nails. And, you know, this really just started, you know, from a very, very early age. And, I kind of didn't make a big deal out of it. And I'd say, she's pretty. She's pretty. Well, about the age of three, it was consistent, you know, for that whole year. And I started to worry. Mm-hmm. And so I went ahead and I started counseling. I said, you know, what's going on with my child here? You know, she's anything, trucks, all the boy toys. I was in the military, so, you know, I'm not the most girliest girl in the world, but she just refused all boy toys and just she wanted to play with the girls. And the way she walked, the way she talked, and everything about her was just very feminine. And
where did you go to look for help?
I actually, our local hospital has the psychiatry department, and it was a counselor. She wasn't a psychiatrist, but she was a counselor. And at that time, I had never even heard of the word transgender. I just was saying, you know, what's going on? You know, what should I do about this? Do I say this is wrong? You know, I was just trying to kind of get some guidance on what to do, because this, I could tell in my heart, this wasn't no normal little boy.
And did you, I wonder, ask your minister?
Excuse me?
Did you speak with your minister about this?
Not at that time. Not at that time. I wasn't attending church regularly at that time.
And eventually, I know that you went on a computer, and when you heard the word transgendered, and looked it up.
Well, the first time I heard transgender was the 2020 Barbara Walters special. That's the first time I'd ever heard and seen these children, because I thought I was the only person in the world. Kind of having to deal with this. And because I had never even heard of it. So that was the first time was the special, and that really kind of was an eye-opener. And I really could feel for these parents and understand what in the world they were going through. And still at that time, I had a little bit, you know, I was kind of still questioning, well, you know, is this the, you know, could this be my sweet pea, or could it be something fixable? I really fought this for 6 years.
Mm.
from the age of two up. And during that time, I had been to a couple other counselors. I had also taken her to counselors, I think about the age of five, started taking her to counselors, and one psychiatrist, and getting all different things from it's a phase, she'll grow out of it, to, well, it's alert behavior, and just really no help from the medical society, period. Nobody really knew about this. Nobody had heard of this, and, you know, and it just was a lot of controversy between the doctors.
I can understand, and it also must have been a lot of pressure on you from the family, from your neighbors.
Well, yeah. Well, we always, since I always let Sweet Pea be herself at home, she would scrounge through the drawers. She would find anything and everything just to make a skirt, take her pajama top, tie it around her waist, and the arms would be tied around her waist, and the neck would be her waistline as skirts. So anything and everything, crowns is for painting nails. I did not go out and buy this stuff. I fought this. I would not buy her Barbie, but if she got money for her birthday, I let her choose what she wanted to buy. You know, but I would never go out and buy her Barbies or buy her a dress or anything like that for all these years.
And what was it that eventually convinced you to stop referring to her as your son and start referring to her as your daughter?
Well, like the 2020 special really opened up my eyes, and I hadn't owned a computer since 2003 when I was in college. So I said, I need to start researching this. I need to research. I need to find out some facts. I need to get plugged in. So I bought the computer, nice computer, started going online, just typing in, Googling transgender. And I also wanted to find some transgender specialist in my area, which I'm from a very small town, which I was so, it was very aggravating because it was like nobody. I couldn't find anybody that knew anything, specialist doctors, anything, even around my area.
Sure.
And so that's when I started kind of reaching out and getting on line with some other parents. And with TIFA, Trans Youth Family Allies, they really, gave me a lot of information, too, especially at the convention that in Philadelphia, and just meeting these other children and meeting these other parents and seeing that, you know, this isn't something, some disease or some mental illness that you can fix. This is just the way they were born. And, you know, as a parent, you know, we just must love and accept them, and, you know.
But, boy, that isn't easy. Let me bring Hannah Rosen into the conversation. She's the contributing editor to Atlantic Monthly and wrote A Boy's Life in the November issue of that magazine. She's with us here in Studio 3A, and nice of you to come. Nice to see you again.
Thank you.
And this, well, one of the things that Tina found out is she is not the only person in this situation. It is not a common difficulty, but it is more common than you would think.
I think the parents of this generation facing this problem have the internet to thank for that. As we all know, there's, you know, niches and groups that form up, and right now there are a lot of good listservs out there for parents of transgender children. The Barbara Walters special was sort of the first of its kind in the sense that she really convinced families to go on camera. They didn't use their real names, but she was allowed into their homes, and she had these very touching moments with some transgender children, so anybody watching TV would have seen that. But for the other parents, wherever they're from, all around the country, even in other countries, they can talk to each other, and they do a lot because this is a pretty lonely situation. I mean, I think you don't throw a stone and find another family of, you know, with a transgender child. And so I think that really has arisen in the last 5 years as a genuine community.
And one of the things you document in your article is the change in how we have come to view the sexual identity issue. Not so long ago, it was thought to be, nurture. And now we're finding out, well, at least we believe now, or many people believe now, it's nature.
Yes, there's been a whole shift in how we talk about these things, and it's really impacted the transgender community pretty forcefully, because it used to be considered, you know, sort of on the continuum from homosexuality, and we used to think of these things as things that we choose, or things that were aberrant behavior, or things that we could control, or, you know, or subject to therapy in some way. And now we tend to think of our identities more as determined by biology. And particularly, there's a lot of new gender science research about the male brain and the female brain. And the transgender community has kind of fallen into this research because the idea is that, you know, you have these boys, let's say, who against all evidence and with all this social pressure, and they know they're going to be made fun of in school and they know they're going to have a hard time, but yet they insist, I am a girl. And so the idea is, well, isn't that in your brain? I mean, isn't there some nugget in there that somehow fires and tells you you're a girl, even against all contrary evidence? Now, I did speak to some researchers, biology research, who say, you know, you got to be careful here because there is really no evidence yet on this. And he's not sure that there ever will be. You know, it's really hard to pinpoint sort of where is it in the brain. And so when they're being very precise, they always caution me, well, don't go too far on that one because we just don't know. We just don't have any evidence. You can't pinpoint, oh, here's the region, here's the hypothalamus, and here's the region of the brain. The research is not there yet.
And there is also a great deal of controversy over what to do about it, including a relatively new technique that involves hormone therapy.
Yes, this is the newest technique that's really impacted this community. It came out of the Netherlands. It was sort of a girl showed up in this Netherlands clinic one day, and she was the first girl the doctors had seen who wasn't really hardly at all traumatized by her puberty. She didn't seem to have breast buds. She didn't seem to be going through that puberty crisis that a lot of kids have. And it turned out that she had hooked up with an endocrinologist who used what are called puberty blockers. Now, these are hormones that have existed for a long time. They've generally been used for kids who go through precocious puberty. So if you have a six-year-old going through puberty, you would give them blockers just to delay it until the appropriate time. And somebody had the idea that you should use these blockers on transgender children. The idea being that, you know, take a boy, you know, what makes what we think of as a transvestite so conspicuous is they have an Adam's apple, they have body hair, they have a square jaw. These are all things that happen during puberty, which makes it basically impossible for a transgender person to ever kind of fit in. So some doctor said, well, if you block puberty, one thing you do is give them time to think about this and make a real decision, you know, do I want to be a boy or a girl? And another thing you do is prevent these future crises.
We'll talk more with Hannah Rosen and more with Tina, the mother of a transgender child called Sweet Pea. Stay with us. Give us a call if this is a situation that you have dealt with personally. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about sexual identity conflicts in young children. On our website, you can find a link to a Q&A with two psychologists with different approaches to working with kids who have sexual identity conflicts. That's at npr.org/talk. Our focus today is on the parents of transgender children. If you're the parent of a child who struggles with his or her sexual identity, tell us your story. 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. Our guests are Hannah Rosen, contributing editor to the Atlantic Monthly. She wrote the article A Boy's Life in the November issue, and one of the mothers she interviewed in that article is named Tina, not her real name. We verified she is who she says she is and agreed to use a pseudonym to protect the identity of her daughter, who we'll call, as she does, Sweet Pea. And let's see if we can get a caller on the line. And let's begin with Jay, and Jay's with us from Cambridge in Massachusetts.
Hello.
Hi, Jay.
Yes, I'm the father of a fifth grader who is what we're now calling gender variant, and he presents as female, and wears a dress and has waist length hair. And at school, he goes to a public school in Cambridge, and he exhibited all the behaviors that Tina's child exhibited, and we wrestled with it in a similar fashion, and. What happened with us was the child didn't become dysphoric. He didn't seem to absolutely need to make a full transition. And so we've been supporting him. He uses male pronouns, but people use female pronouns with him, and he's fine with that. As mm-hmm. People aren't trying to be mean. And he would never be mistaken for a male child. He's anatomically normal, but he just... he passes perfectly as female, or at least he has till now. Puberty's right around the corner, so we are waiting to see what puberty brings, and there's the possibility that he will be transgender. There's the possibility that he will identify as gay, and there's the possibility that he will be a heterosexual cross-dresser. So, you know, whatever it is, we're ready for it. But the thing about the gender identity is it's a continuum. It's not a binary. And there are people, and there have always been people, who are in the middle.
I wonder, Jay, did you consider or were aware of the possibility of this hormone therapy, the blockers?
We know about the hormone therapy. We're not at the point where it would be appropriate for us. And people who use the hormone therapy are generally people who are suffering from gender dysphoria, which basically means they're really, really, really screwed up really, really suffering. And so it's a sort of a strange situation to be in where you're wondering, you know, is my child suffering enough where the risks of the hormone therapy outweigh the advantages of it. We know Dr. Spack in Boston, and we know of him, and he runs the clinic, and we will be to see him in a heartbeat if my child begins to make self-mutilating gestures or make suicidal comments, which is currently not happening. He's accepted. He has friends. He's doing very well.
Tina, this is something that you've thought about too.
Yes, and bless you, and you're doing a great job, Dad.
Thank you.
It's a rough situation, and I feel it, and I've struggled, and Sweet Pea wasn't trying to cut herself, wasn't severely depressed,
yep.
But it was enough of every day, the sadness of she'd come out and she designs clothes. She's been drawing in art and designing clothes since 4 years old.
Yep.
And wow. Every time she'd come out and say, Mom, look at me, you know, I didn't say, oh, that's stupid, but I would kind of just play, yeah, that's okay. And you could just see the sadness just, you know, from her face.
Yeah.
This never-ending of her just not feeling accepted. And, you know, I always told her, I said, I'll always love you. I'll always support you. I don't care whatever you are. And it was just really hard. So it was really hard because we weren't where I hear some of these stories with some transgender children. We weren't at that point where they were, you know, he was threatening to do anything like that. But then I could see just this sadness and almost like a slight, very reserved, very shy, very us. What's the word? Didn't have good self-confidence at all. And if you see her today, you can't take the smile off her face. And, you know, she's happy. She's doing great in school. We just, you know, started the social transition back in June, 3 months ago, and she started third grade as a girl. And we switched, you know, we went through a lot to make this possible. And she just, in this case, in our case, it really seems I felt from the bottom of my heart, no matter what the doctors, because doctors, all different doctors will tell you all different things, and it's so much controversy and so new, but from the bottom of my heart, this is just what I had to do for her, and there was no other choice. It felt like because it was either have a sad, depressed, self-loathing child that, you know, really wasn't happy, and was not happy because she couldn't be herself except for at home. And then, you know, I was still even trying to deny her there where I wasn't, you know, I wasn't being mean, but I was really trying for all these years to change this, to fix this. I thought we could fix this.
Jay, was there a moment when you thought you could fix this?
I early on thought that we would suppress the behavior because it seemed like the teasing would be intolerable. My wife thought it was a normal variation, that it would go away by itself. And by the time we both understood that it wasn't going away, we had both decided to support our child. That said, we always sort of drew boundaries, and he kept pushing against them and pushing against them. And he basically transitioned himself, socially transitioned himself. He found a dress at a school swap meet. He, you know, grew out the hair, and just he essentially kept pushing. And when the culture, when our community didn't push back, when he was accepted, we watched and waited, and it seemed like this was what he had to do to be happy. And it quickly becomes a non-issue once you get used to it. And
you know, once you get used to it, that's the hard part.
It's a strange thing. I mean, people are who they are, and it seems to cut to the core of identity in this way that stranger, I think, would be to see someone who is suppressing it who is truly uncomfortable in their own skin. And if you read, you know, True Selves, and you read about previous generations of transgender and gay and lesbians, it seems like one of the things they suffer through is the fact that they look normal, but they're being forced, compelled to look like everyone else. But as they come of age, they realize that they're not like everyone else, and there's an incredible a sense of leading an inauthentic existence. And we just didn't want that for our child.
Jay, we wish you and your son or daughter, I'm not sure how you refer to him or her, the best of luck.
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And Hannah Rosen, I wanted to ask you, bring you back in here. This is unusual. We were talking about that continuum of different types of identities, and true transgender turns out to be very unusual.
It is very unusual, and by some stroke of luck, I happen to know both of these kids who we're talking about here, and it was a very instructive to me to meet a range of kids, because I don't know how else to put this except, you know, when I talk about Sweet Pea and the child of Jay, their energies are so completely different. So the Jay's child has this really unusual kind of, he looks like a girl and dresses like a girl, and he wrestles with his brother, and there's some part of him that's so kind of masculine and boyish, you know, and makes kind of boy jokes, and there's some other part of him that sort of dresses up Barbie doll. I mean, it's a very unusual thing to see, and like Jay said, it's just people are who they are, and in Sweet Pea's case, she does have a sort of a reserve about her that makes you think that there's something that wants to be expressed that isn't being expressed. And maybe it's confidence. I don't know how you refer to it, but it really is it's a rare thing. And you just have, when you see it, you kind of know it. And I think as a parent, you just have to tune in kind of closely. There aren't very good studies, by the way, about how much, how uncommon it is. There are studies about adults, which estimates range from 1 in 7,400 to 1 in 42,000.
That's, which is a pretty big range.
And that's because it's done in all Western countries and different, you know, we don't have any socialized medicine. It's easier to track numbers in a place like the Netherlands, where there's only one clinic you go to, or even England. And so they are able to track their patients because there's only one place to go to get a sex change operation. Because that's not true in the U.S., we don't really have very good numbers.
Now, here's an email from Andrea in Princeton, New Jersey. I'm very happy for Sweet Pea. I am, though, hearing her story with sadness, not for her, but for myself, and in particular how I lived a suboptimal life for 45-plus years. I tried very hard to act like a guy, but my heart wasn't in it, and I got to the point that I couldn't fool myself or anyone else anymore. When I was a child, we didn't even have a vocabulary to talk about the condition or what words there were, or generally words that were more commonly used to describe sexual deviance. I sometimes wish I could turn the clock back and live the childhood I wanted to have. Let's see if we get another caller on the line. And this is Danny. Danny with us from Oklahoma City.
Hello.
Hi.
I have a child, a son, or he's biologically a son, and he's also a twin. And he started showing abnormal, if you want to call them, behaviors not typical of his male personality when he was about 18 months, 2 years old.
And what about his twin?
His twin is the complete opposite. He's 100% all boy. He's into the Marines and very outgoing, and I mean, they're just completely opposite little boys. When my son was about three, he always displayed characters and desires that when he went to the store to pick something out, it was always the feminine color, what we consider feminine colors, feminine toys. And when he was about the age of three or so, he tried to self-mutilate himself after he took a bath, telling me, screaming up and down, that, you know, girls don't have these, mommy. So I took him to the pediatrician. I realized that this may not be a phase or something definitely going on with my son. Now, as a parent, you have to realize the struggle that pulls into you. And when I see my child there, and I can go to the store and pick up books on almost any type of disorder, physical or mental, on what to do with any type of child and how to get through it. And there's parent support groups locally everywhere you go. But when you have a child that goes against the society norm for their outside sex, there's not much out there for parents. Now, my son is now in this preteens, and there's a lot more available in the last 5-10 years than was when I first started this. I went to a children's hospital. I had a complete exam done of him. I had hormone tests. I had DNA stuff, genetics. So, I, you know, just every type of test you could think of. I said, I want to know everything about my son you can tell me in case I need to do something now.
Mm-hmm.
And he turned out to be all boy. we went into the child psychology department, and through there I was referred to Washington, to the D.C. Children's Hospital, which is absolutely amazing. And they were very supportive of me, not to identify him as a boy or a girl, not to identify his toys as boy or girl. We dropped that type of talk in the house. Everything became gender neutral. When he started reaching school age, I was asked by one of the school officials, what's your greatest fear in your child going to school? And I said that you're going to try to change my son, and I don't want him changed. I want you to leave him alone and let him develop into what he's going to be.
And how's he doing?
He's doing really good right now. We've had ups and downs. I think it's, a lot of it's normal. I thought, as a parent, I was watching his age progress and made an appointment to go in because I wanted, was thinking about having a hormone blocker started, not to transition him into a female, but to give him more chance to grow up without the hormones kicking in so that when he gets to the appropriate age, he can make that decision.
Hmm.
And right now, he's sort of on the fence. He doesn't know, he knows he's a girl, but he's not sure that he wants to transition fully. So he's, and I told him that's very age appropriate. This is very, very age appropriate to question who you are and stuff. He knows we use both the female and the male pronouns in the house. He wears mainly female coloring, but he goes to school now in jeans and T-shirts, which luckily nowadays is you can pretty much do that no matter what sex you are.
Yeah.
So he's one of the children that's on the fence. I don't know, as with what Jay said, there's no way of telling what these children's future is going to be. He could be transgender, he could be gay, he could be heterosexual, he could be homosexual. I don't know where he's going, and I don't want to put him in a hole because he doesn't want to be in there right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I want all opportunities open to him so that when he gets older, he can make that decision on his own. Now, unfortunately, by the time I got to the specialist's office to start the hormone blockers, we realized he was full-blown into puberty, and I made a decision at that time not to go ahead with him, since he'd already started the process. So if he does decide to transgender or
transition.
Yeah, transition.
He'll have additional problems.
It's going to be more difficult for him because he'll develop the deeper voice, he'll develop the hormones, he'll develop the Adam's apple, which is all very extensive to. These children are so fortunate today, so very, very fortunate with these hormone blockers because that can keep them from going in to the biological sex. And therefore, the surgeries, when they get older, are not as deeply what I consider invasive,
Danny.
And it would be for children that are in their 20s, 30s, 40s, and all of a sudden now want to transition. They've got a lot more surgeries to go through.
Danny, again, we wish you and your child the best of luck.
Okay.
Appreciate it. We're talking about transgender children. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And quickly, Hannah Rosen, the controversy, or one of the controversies about the gender blockers, is the age at which you have to do it. She was talking about age appropriate. This happens, well, the children are not necessarily the right age to make these decisions for themselves.
Well, for puberty blockers, you have to start this process really early. I mean, if you think about the age that girls today start going through puberty, it's about age, you know, 10 to 12. And so you've got to start going, you've got to start the testing at around age 8 or 9 for girls. And for boys, it's a couple of years later. So maybe you have to start 9 or 10, sort of taking them to the endocrinologist and start the testing because everybody goes through it at different ages. But let's say it's between 8 and 12. And if you do puberty blockers and then decide to go through a sex change operation, you will never be able to have children. I mean, there are certain long-term decisions that you have to do. And the fact is, in the Netherlands, which has been doing this for 10 years and tracking them, nobody who's ever done hormone blockers has ever decided not to have the sex change operation, which suggests either, as I wrote in my story, that there's really good screening in the Netherlands. In other words, they really catch the people who are truly, truly transgendered, or that once you start down medical intervention, it's very difficult to turn back. Those are the two things the doctors talk about.
And Tina, I'm afraid we just have a few seconds left. Have you decided what to do?
I definitely would like to do the hormone blockers. It's not a whole lot in this area. I may have to travel to Boston, which is about a 10, 12-hour trip. But at this time, it's kind of what the lady before said. I want to give Sweet Pea the best chance in this life. And, you know, when she gets a little bit older, you know, 17, 18, and has to make this life-altering decision, I guess people would think, then then at least it won't be so hard any which way, because the blockers are totally irreversible. So it's not hurting her to do this. And you know, in her mind, in her soul, in her heart, she's all girl. And you know, that's not to say that down the road she may change, and that's fine, and I leave that open for her. And I said, any time at all you feel comfortable with being, you know, what, you let me know. I said, I'll love you no matter what.
And Tina, send Sweet Pea our best, will you? Thank you very much for doing this. I know it wasn't easy.
Thank you. You have a great day.
You too. Tina and Hannah Rosen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Again, article in the Atlantic Monthly. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.